And welcome to No Filter Sports, this edition being recorded on Thursday, January 16th, 2020. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, and Bob Page. And we got so much to talk about today in the wake of the national championship game in football. Alex Karras making the Hall of Fame, a very disturbing retirement from football. On it goes. The Red Wings giving up 8 goals in a game. But I want to start, and we're
Spuddy
also
gonna, getting fired Spuddy, in Vegas.
Yeah, Gerard Gallant.
Hopefully he's on the next plane to Detroit.
That's a possibility too.
Gerard Gallant. And by the way, Eli, you also forgot to welcome once again Mark Fellauer to our program.
Yes, Mark Fellauer is producing for us today.
Steve, very honored.
you're so full of that.
And furthermore, Mark, coming, folks, you don't want to miss this. You know what kind of a football sepulcher he is. So in the latest segment of the program, Mark's going to give us his picks on this weekend's footy.
Gladly.
Tottenham Hotspur playing this weekend then.
UEFA Champions League back in rotation this week. Okay.
Well, if he does that, then I'll preview the Conor McGregor getting back into the octagon.
No!
And also later in the show, very excited about this, one of my all-time favorite guys, Milt Wilcox.
Why?
Star of the... Why?
Tell me why.
Well, because we're the same age. We kind of started our careers in Detroit
at the same age.
At the same time. He came here in 77. That's basically when I started. We also did a talk show together on WDFN, which we are on right now. This show plays. We did it back in 1995, Milty and I. And, you know, I was there when he started his ultimate dog jumping thing.
Oh, yeah.
And a Denny. This is a surprise for you that Eli and I have planned. Eli has done meticulous research about this, and he has learned that it's astounding what you and Milt Wilcox had in common.
They have
not just as regulated pitchers.
I'm not going to tell you because you have two things in common, and one of them is more than hilarious. And we'll get to that later when we have.
Still don't understand why you're so excited.
Because you'll see it.
What? What are you doing?
Should I do it now?
Wait a second. Wait a second. He won 17 one year, right?
Right.
I won that before the All-Star break. You never get excited to see me.
I'm
going to
do it right now, okay? I'm going to do it right now, and we'll talk about it later.
Excited about me once in a while.
Here we go. So as you see here, I'll show you about this is my 1978 Tiger press guide.
I got the same damn thing right in front of me. Okay. On my
hand here. We saved it for the last.
What's going on here?
I've saved it for 40 years, and I refer because I'm a geek, and I guess every now and then it pays off. So I know Milt came here in '77 after missing the previous year in the majors because he had arm trouble and he was pitching in the minor leagues.
Yeah, sure he did.
So it says he. Oh God, let me find it.
Well, if you're going to use it, you should have had a bookmark.
I had a bookmark,
prepared,
but
I can't.
Oh,
he's looking for a specific quote about what Milt Wilcox
take
does
your time.
To rehab.
Yeah. Right,
I need to take my time. Too much coffee this morning, as usual.
By the way, I'm going to be in North Carolina and Raleigh this weekend since we've got so much time to waste here right now.
Here we go.
Oh, here we go.
It's on our miscellany.
We're getting excited
again. It says, Milt calls his fastball a yak-a-doo.
Yak-a-boo?
Also uses sinker and slip pitch. I don't know what a slip. What's a slip pitch?
It sounds dirty to me.
Slip pitches. He says, off-season bowling strengthened his arm.
Hey, Milt!
When he was fighting tendonitis following nosedive at Cleveland. Okay, so.
See?
So the old analog there's some guys training method.
And you know what? There's some guys in the major leagues using bowling right now, too.
We'll talk about that later. But first, this story is ongoing about the Astros and the firings and the suspensions and Major League Baseball cracking down on pitch stealing. I can honestly say I've been doing jobs like this for the last 45 years in sports broadcasting of one type or another. I have never had a big story like this that I felt less qualified to confidently express a well-thought-out opinion.
You should let us vote on your qualifications.
I really don't know what the severity of it all is. Is it an overreaction? Does everybody do it? Does it really impact the games? I do not know how prevalent and universal it is. Milt's got some ideas about that. I know you do too, but pitch stealing is something.
Being the excellent reporter you are, why don't you start with the basic Associated Press style news, okay?
The news is.
Or shall I do that? Throughout 2017, Houston used video replays from the center field camera to swipe pitch signs from opposing teams' catchers. When Houston had a runner on second, a hitter received
a
decoded sign from the dugout or a coach in the dugout and flash it to the batter. Eventually, they actually had someone banging on a trash can to alert whether a fastball or off-speed pitch was coming.
Now let me,
so in the wake of this, they first suspended, amazingly, the Astros manager, okay, A.J. Hinch, and then they fired him. And then Alex Cora, who was a coach on that Houston team, came to an agreement with the Red Sox that he would resign. The Houston GM fired as well. And now, Eli, take it away.
Well, you left out a little thing, and you're doing your AP story. You left out an important detail, and that is that
Wait a second. Do you read these in all capital letters, or you'd use a lowercase?
No, I'm a magna cum laude graduate of a Big Ten University.
Stop!
I read perfectly well.
Yes, you
will.
Yeah, okay.
So, how about you?
Very, very
hold
well.
Hold on.
It's a little hard knocks,
matter
right?
Matter of fact, I still remember my Latin and Catholic Church altar boy. I used to be an altar boy, believe it or not.
Sophomoric sniping.
And we won't take it any farther
Shut
than
up!
That.
The sophomoric sniping must end, okay?
But I'm not sniping. We're having a conversation.
The point you left out was that there is now video replay rooms in every major league ballpark with sophisticated replay equipment, so people can look at their last at bat. The batters can pitch and can see what they pitch. And so, with this sophisticated equipment, with a center field camera, they now can see the pitches as they happen. So the technology has improved to a lot. Now you're allowed to steal signs in baseball. It is legitimate. You cannot use electronic equipment
by the players only. Not by the administration.
No, players. Players cannot use electronic equipment to steal signs.
Players can steal any signs as long as they don't get caught.
Well, they've been caught, and it's going to be.
Baseball is now going to move that room, that technologically advanced room that they use right now. They're going to move that room because they're only going to have one person in the room with the equipment.
So they're not going to allow then. Batters to look at the last at bat to see what they did.
Exactly.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that either. But these are guys that were headed to the Hall of Fame potentially.
Yes, sir.
Alex Cora is highly respected. AJ Hinch, all the more so. And for them to maybe be tainted for life, I don't know how this is going to play out. It can't be as bad as steroids.
No, it can't be. It can't be as bad as gambling on your team or gambling on baseball in general. It can't be anywhere near that. You know, this is what I have a problem with. A number of years ago, 15, 18 years ago, they tested everybody in baseball and found 106 guys tested positive for steroids. All right, 106. Yet only three felt the wrath of the Major League commissioner. Namely, Rodriguez was one of them, and then there were a couple of other guys. But you know what? They didn't do anything to those guys except Rodriguez and the two other guys. And the other 103 skated, got away with it, and yet we'll never, ever find out if any of those guys qualify for the Hall of Fame. We should be told if they ever tested positive for any of these steroid drugs. That's number one. Number two, this guy fires. I'd like to take a stick and stick it up his ass. This is a bad guy.
Say that on our show.
I take
the word ass.
It's okay. Let's explain who he is. He pitched for the Astros in 2017, and he's the one who kind of
snitched. And he has a ring, too, so shouldn't he turn that
back? He's got a ring, and he got a check for $400,000, $300,000, all right? He's a snitch and a whistleblower, and that's the problem. You know what? How do you play with these guys, take the money, take the ring, take everything you can take that is a great thing when you win a ball game, when you play that far into a season, and then turn on the guys you played with? Did they do something to him that he wanted to get even? Maybe the story's not been officially and totally told yet.
So anyway, some guy in the AP writes, a columnist I'd never heard of, that AJ is now so disgraced he'll never manage again. Cora, never manage again. Blackballed for life. Now, word out of New York is that the main reason the Mets are not going to fire brand new manager Carlos Beltran, at least not yet, is that they'd have to pay him off too much money. So Beltran was a player on the 2017 Astros and allegedly one of the masterminds behind this entire plan. Denny, what should the punishment have been for all these people?
Well, first of all, I don't believe any of them should have been suspended. I mean, fined, I'll buy the fines and donate the money to charities, but not fired, not fined. Listen, cheating has been going on in our game in some form, one way or the other, for a long time. I made a list of some guys who cheated every time they went out on the mound. Gaylord Perry, John Wyatt, who used, believe it or not, Preparation H. That's what he used to throw spitball. Terry Fox used Vaseline. Phil Reagan used Preparation H.
George Brett used Grant. Preparation Mudcat H, too, but for the real reason.
Mudcat, well, that's the reason John Wyatt had it. Mudcat Grant had so much Preparation H. They found out that Preparation H was the best thing you could do.
Yeah, it was very slippery. Yeah, it was perfect.
Very slippery, and you couldn't smell it unless you had a lot of it on you. And so Mudcat Grant put so much on him one day, home plate umpire Runge said to him, listen, if I light a match, do we all blow up?
Can I ask a question about this whole cheating scandal?
No.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So the problem is...
We like Mark. He's a butt instinct.
Come on, let's go.
That's okay. We like
I can take plenty of punches. So the problem is technology, right, has really kind of made this bigger. Why not get rid of signs via technology? Can the catcher wear something where he just talks to the pitcher?
Wouldn't that be overheard by the batter?
Well, not if he's got something in front of his mouth. I mean, they do it. They do
not
it.
Not if they're speaking Spanish, which they probably are.
That's a great point.
They are talking about having the pitcher, the manager, and the catcher having, like, the NFL quarterback.
Not?
They're thinking about doing that. I've always thought that would be a good idea because now you got a manager who could really screw up the game.
And it's a lot harder to steal those, you know, the signals through, picking up the radio frequency because they block it in the NFL. Yeah, so why not just do that?
But I got to tell you, personally, if I had a manager sitting in the dugout and trying to tell me what pitch to throw every time, and I'm out there and I can see if a guy is stepping closer to the plate or further away from the plate.
You would turn his mic off.
You would have a toggle switch.
You would crash it. I mean, you would throw it in a glass of water and let him drown with it because there's no way to accept that. It's impossible.
You know, so we have a listener named Dave Arnold who tweeted me, and I quote, I'm appalled this is considered cheating. Just chalk it up to the softening of people in general. If somebody's feeling cheated, deprived, or oppressed, it's just not a normal day. Here's an idea. Do a better job protecting your signs or change them up once in a while. And you know what, boys? Think about this. I feel cheated a lot. Don't you? I mean, I know nothing about cars except how to drive one. Every time I take mine into the dealership – and they tell me, Mr. Page, the whatchamajigget thingy is broken, and that'll be $1,100, please. I think they're cheating me. I mean, repairmen at my house, I don't fully trust any of them.
Man, poor Laura. You
know who wasn't cheating this whole thing? The fans of the Houston Astros. Because I'll tell you right now, as a Tiger fan, if they could cheat right now and we win the World Series there's punishment, I'll take it all day long.
And probably they have. I mean, everybody's been cheating. The Dodgers were trying to cheat on the Astros in the World Series, too, I'm sure.
Well, the Dodgers were cheating when they had Drysdale and Koufax together on the same team, too.
Two things here. One, the stats. And two is going to be the stats of how the cheating didn't help.
Right.
In 17, when the Astros won 2017, at home, they hit 279 home runs, they batted 279, 115 home runs. And a slugging percentage of .472. On the road, they hit higher .284, had eight more homers, and their slugging percentage was 11 points better. And in 18, same difference. Better stats on the road than at home, you know, when the cheating was more sophisticated.
You know what the difference is? I can tell you what's coming, and if I've got good stuff that day, I'm still going to beat you.
But come on now.
I'm going to beat you if you know what's coming. I'm telling you right now.
That's because McClain.
No, it's got nothing to do with
Denny
McClain. Most guys
aren't. If you have a timeout, if I'm a 250 hitter and I'm at the plate,
you're still
and I'm told it's going to be a 95 mile an hour fastball or a 77 mile an hour curve, I'm not any better off knowing what the pitch is?
No. You know why? Because the pitcher is going to put it where he wants to put. I'm talking about having pretty good control and putting the ball where you want to put it. So if you can get the ball in on a guy's hands, or you can get the ball down and away in the part of the strike zone,
I don't believe that it can't
still
help.
Going to hit 250 or less.
I can't believe it doesn't help to know.
I'm not. Listen, it may help in batting practice, but it doesn't help in a game because not only that, but you know how the pitchers hit their shoulders once in a while with their gloves. That's going to a different kind of signals between the catcher and the pitcher and the shortstop. Shortstop and second baseman have to know too. But the bottom line is, none of that stuff works if the guy can't throw strikes and if the guy is, you know what? Al Kaline would not be affected by it. Al Kaline said, not a chance in hell do I want to know the signs. Why? Because if you ever guess wrong, you're going to wear that 128 seam in your ear. And that happens too many times.
And there are a lot of cases, apparently, in the World Series where some Astro hitters missed by ridiculous margins.
Oh, my God.
Because they thought the wrong pitch was coming.
Well, look at the last pitch that Milt Wilcox threw on the tape that we just saw.
Right.
All right? He said, the next pitch is going to be down and in or inside on the hand. He missed it by 3.5 feet.
You're going to ask?
Well, you guys know that in 2017, June, just before Mr. Avila foolishly gave away one of the greatest pitchers of his era, Justin Verlander.
Oh, I'm glad
Houston.
You brought that name
Jay,
up.
JV gave an interview to M Live, and he said,
sir.
Sure, cheating goes on, pitch stealing, so on and so forth. But JV said he was extremely concerned about this new electronic sign stealing, the new technology. He said, I don't know where we're going with this, but it scares me. Now, again, as Eli mentioned, we're doing this Thursday morning. He ain't said a word about this.
Well, I'm glad you just said that, my son, because he is supposed to be Mr. Leader down in Houston. He's supposed to be Mr. Integrity. He's supposed to be Mr. Slider and Mr. Curveball and Mr. Hall of Fame. Where the hell is he defending his players? Where the hell is he? Did he ever use them? Did he ever accept the signals? Of course he did. Everybody did. So, I mean, where is he? Speak up, Justin, right now. Speak up like a man and let everybody know how you feel about this. Whether he agrees with it or not, speak up. Everybody's waiting to hear from Verlander. Not a word. You're absolutely right.
Well, by the time people hear this show, maybe he has. But if we're almost done with this, I'd like to leave with this comment. Soft Weekly, one of our regular listeners, tweeted, and I quote, talking with my friend who is very involved with his two daughters' softball league. He tells me all the girls are stealing signs. It's common in big-time girls' softball.
I could buy stealing makeup and cosmetics, but I can't buy stealing signs in girls' softball.
I coach girls' softball. I was a great girls' softball coach, and I was very intense with it.
That doesn't surprise me.
And then after
me.
About two games, I said to the team beforehand, okay, remember, when you get to first base, run through it. Remember to hit the cutoff man. This and that. I said, any questions? You know what the question was?
What's a cutoff man?
What's our snack afterwards? Then I knew I was taking it way too seriously. So last question for you.
Okay.
You said that they could be banned for life. Mark McGwire came back as a
hitting
coach.
Yeah, not necessarily banned for life, blackballed for life.
Well, Isn't that the same thing?
Nobody's going to hire him.
Yeah, they're going to hire him.
Oh,
I hope so.
I hope so too.
In fact, if Gardy wants to finish out the next season and say sayonara, geez, AJ Hinch should be fantastic.
You could have Helen Keller coach his team, and you can't win with this team.
Hinch apologized.
Yes, he did.
In fact, twice he ruined the monitor, but never stopped it. He apologized for not stopping it. Lunau claimed that he really didn't know, but Cora did not apologize after the Red Sox fired him because he thinks, and he had a reputation and was respected as being one of the best sign stealers in the game.
Right.
He said, you just have to be prepared as a team. This is what he said, not yesterday, but last year when he was asked about it. Stealing signs and tipping has been going on forever. I learned it in Miami in college. I don't know if that's good for the program, but yeah, we used to do it. And he said, that's getting the edge. You learn to start paying attention to details. He took great pride in his baseball IQ. Yep. He considered that part of it, and that's why he's considered one of the great managers in the game.
And let me add one thing to what I said about fires. As mad as I am at fires, there were three or four, five other guys that also came forward to talk about this. And I'd like to know who those four guys are because they're gutless. They can't step up and accept for what they did. And I just can't believe. Doesn't it bother you guys that the guy slept with them, ate with them, traveled with them?
Verlander?
Fires. I'm talking about fires. Yeah. Doesn't it bother you that the guy is standing behind you with a knife and as soon as
I know what you're saying, but let me tell you what bothers me more than that.
Please.
I saw Fires pitch for the Tigers in spring training at Port St. Lucie 2 years ago. Very effective. Avila let him go for nothing on a team that was desperate for pitching, and Mike Fiers went on and has had some pretty decent years since then. That's what bothers me more. And if I can mention the conversation the three of us had on the last show about Casey Mize and Matt Manning, the Tigers' two top prospects, being put, in our opinion, in the pathetic rotation now. Plenty of room. But this week we got word that Al Avila has solved the problem. In a stroke of genius, Al went out and signed Ivan Nova to a free agent deal, and they say he'll be in the rotation. He's now entering his 11th big league season. He made an American League most 34 starts for the White Sox last season, but also led the league in hits given up, 225, posted a sterling 11-2 record with a 4.72 ERA.
He wasn't 11-2. That's pretty good, 11-2.
I'm sorry, 11-12.
Yeah, 11-12. Thank you.
With a 4.72, and he joins what most people are now saying is the Tigers' probable rotation of Matthew Boyd, unless they trade him,
Norris,
Spencer Turnbull, Jordan Zimmermann, who makes me want to get a bat and get up there and hit him, and Daniel Norris, rookie Tyler Alexander, possibly, and still no mention of Mize or Manning being in the rotation this year.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to, if they don't have those two kids in the ballpark, they're not going to draw any more people than they did last year. Nova's 33 years old, and he got a contract for $1.5 million and $500,000 in incentives. I just want the incentives.
Let's get into football.
And by the way, did you see that the Twins have signed former American League MVP Josh Donaldson?
Oh, yeah.
$92 million, four-year contract. Club option for a fifth season. That's going to be a $100 million deal for the guy.
$108 million.
Who was injured a lot last year, but still hit 37 homers and 94 with 94 ribbies. Now, so the Twins get him, but we don't worry about that, do we?
No.
Because we got Hamer Candelario to play third base instead. Why don't they do something? Make a move like that.
What the Tigers are doing is baffling to everybody. Here's what isn't baffling. What isn't baffling is that if you want to have 2020 vision in 2020,
that was smooth.
Without glasses, without contacts, you know what you do? You call Dr. Yaldo. Call the number at your convenience, going for a free evaluation. Dr. Yaldo examines your eyes up to a dozen different ways, down to the micron, to determine what your particular issues are. He would never touch anybody for LASIK or for multifocal lens exchange, for those people 45 plus who hate their reading glasses, unless you are a perfect candidate. He might even tell you that to wait until a condition changes, or that you're simply not a good candidate for LASIK or the lens exchange, but that's very rare. 99% of people are. That's why one of the reasons he's become one of the most trusted and experienced eye surgeons in the Midwest, because he's there to serve people the gift of great vision, not to simply take your money. Do what hundreds of listeners to Drew and Mike and our show have done. Call Dr. Yaldo. Find out what you're required to get you rid of your glasses, your contacts, and reading glasses. Then decide for yourself. 1-800-398-EYES. 1-800-398-EYES. Or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
And now, once you get your eyes fixed, you come to Hall Financial to read
your mortgage fixed.
And have a. And by the way, they've got a couple of questions for you. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have a lingering high interest rate credit card debt? Fact is that right now rates are within fractions of a percentage point of their lows of the last 10 years. Recently, Hall Financial has been averaging 10 days from start to finish for listeners that have applied for refi on their mortgage, who are our customers. It's a simple process, and you get started by calling 248-308-5000 or going to DavidHallMortgage.com. A lot of homeowners need to reduce their rates, shorten their terms, or take cash out. We get testimonials and thank yous every week from listeners that we've sent to Hall Financial, and you can check out the reviews. Hall Financial, by the way, has nearly 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients. That's 1,000 five stars. Go to David Hall. Put your hand down, unless you're going to do something with it.
Eli's signaling Denny to wrap up the commercial. Denny's starting to choke on his words as a result. And now look at how much time we're wasting.
Ad-libbing. He's throwing it.
I'm not ad-libbing. I'm reading what you wrote.
And give the MLS number.
Let me finish. Go to MrDavidHallMortgage.com to get started, or call 248-308-5000 and make sure to tell them No Filter Sports sent you. That's me and Bob. Equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435. Play those numbers. You're a winner.
Let me set the record straight. I went to Hall Financial and
yes,
got a refi, so I am a big endorser. And by the way, congratulations to Dave, who had his first child. And I believe his first child about a month ago.
So David did. Well, David, congratulations!
And you're listening to
the baby. It was also a biological first in the history of mankind. Dave had a child.
Well, I understand we named the
right,
baby.
Eli?
I understand we named the baby Denny.
We didn't. You are listening.
What are we listening to?
Can I please say you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast? Thank you. How about Joe Burrow? Can we talk about Joe Burrow?
Yes, please, please, my guy.
Now, I must admit, I was listening to a sports show on Fox, and the commentator, whose name escapes me now, made a great point. And he's saying, you take a guy like Burrow, as opposed to a college football player, as opposed to a college basketball player, this guy, 3 years he basically wasted at Ohio State. Yep. He had to transfer. He played behind. First, JT Barrett beat him out because he was hurt in spring ball of his freshman year. Then, since he didn't get to play much, they had Haskins be the first string guy. He leaves after 3 years. He gets his degree because he knows he has to go. Look at all the quarterbacks, Burrow, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts. It's tough to make it in college football. You got to play there for 3 years. The price you pay physically is intense. And, you know, there's to see what a guy like Burrow had to do to get to that point is very impressive. You see guys in the transfer portal all the time. It's hard to make it, especially in football, at the level he did. So what a great story he is in breaking all these records, winning the Heisman Trophy. He plays two games for the national championship and obviously the semifinals and the finals. Right. 12 touchdown passes. No turnovers in the two games. It's remarkable, breaking records right and left, what LSU has done. And what's fascinating is that the college game is more sophisticated offensively than the pro game, and it used to always be the other way.
Right, it never used to be.
He is NFL-ready in a minute, and you got to give credit to this guy, Joe Brady. He was the passing game coordinator. Where they get these guys like Jamar Chase, who caught 9 balls for 221 yards, remarkable. And the coach,
and by the way, Brady is not the passing game coordinator anymore.
Nope.
This guy's 30 years old and just got hired by the Carolina Panthers as their offensive coordinator, youngest in NFL history.
Well, look at all the NFL coaches that are in their 30s.
Yep. Well, they just hired, the Panthers just hired former Baylor head coach,
right,
Matt Rhule,
who's in his 30s. You got the guy, you got Kyle Shanahan, I think, is 40.
Matt LaFleur is pretty young.
Yeah, 30, Michigan's right, own Matt LaFleur. You know, Eli, I hate to date us because we're about the same age. I actually saw Fran Tarkenton play at Georgia and more than once. He was amazing, still the greatest scrambler I've ever seen. I saw Heisman Trophy winner Roger Staubach play at Navy on TV in 1960. So that's 60 years of my seeing virtually every quarterback at some point in his college career, though I don't remember seeing Namath at Alabama. I mention this because I have never seen a better NFL quarterback prospect than Joe Burrow.
Astounding. I haven't either. I'm going to tell you. First of all, the university is a hell of a school, number one, for football. I don't know about their education process.
They're pretty good, actually.
I know nothing, but they say it's pretty good. They got a great medical facility down there, too. But I'll tell you, Burrow, all you can say about him, he's a legitimate star, legitimate guy all the way around. He got a great family. Mm-hmm. He's been brought up the right way. And I tell you, we've seen a lot of college football in our life, right? Mm-hmm. A lot. And I'll tell you, this may be the best college team I ever saw.
Well, 15-0 was pretty good.
Pretty
the
good.
The way they beat people, they were back. By the way, they were down 17-7 to Clemson early in that game,
and they came back. And the big story about that is that the entertainment continued after the game was over.
when we saw
Odell Beckham Jr. jump out onto the field, the former LSU star now with the Cleveland Clowns, and he's handing out clumps of cash to LSU receivers minutes later in full view of the television camera. So on Wednesday, LSU had to issue a statement about this. Justin Jefferson and John Trey Kirkland were both juniors. Jefferson said that he's declaring for the NFL draft, ending his eligibility. NCAA bylaws state, quote, if the student athlete
takes an extra benefit.
If the student athlete receives an extra benefit not authorized by the NCAA, then he's ineligible. But that's moot now because Jefferson's going on to the NFL. I think personally, OBJ was just being a mensch. All the dough LSU paid him to play there, and now that he's a multimillionaire, he's just giving it back. What a guy.
Well, first of all, there's 7 LSU players that have declared they're jumping in the NFL draft.
Yeah.
So far, 7. And as far as him giving money out, you know what? It's his money. I don't care how much he gives each player. He can do with his money any way he wants. He's earned it. He's played hard. He's a great player.
If those kids are still at LSU, that's not true.
You watch. One day somebody's going to court to turn over some of these silly rules in the NCAA. And the NCAA has more silly rules in it than any other organization that I know about. And as far as the ages of the coaches and everybody else they're talking about in their 30s and 40s, listen, everything's cyclical. And this poor kid, you know the worst thing that's going to happen to Burrow? He's going to wind up in Cincinnati.
It's so anti.
But remember this. He's actually from Athens, Ohio, where Ohio U is. That's about a 2.5-hour drive from Cincy. So this is his hometown team. And to rescue his hometown team, perhaps, and lead him to glory. I bet he's happy about going to the
Bengals. It'd be like rescuing the Tigers. It's
everywhere,
impossible.
Everywhere in America, we're encouraged to benefit from our great system, our great democracy and capitalistic system, right. To make money by the benefit of our skill, our talent, our perseverance. The NCAA has a million rules to prevent a penny from going to anybody. Right. I still think the most amazing story this year was the kid Wiseman of the Memphis basketball player, who, as a high school kid, Penny Hardaway gave his family a loan to help them move. They needed $10,000, and that negates his ability to play.
Right.
It's just
terrible.
Absurd.
It's a horrible.
After watching the championship game as a Michigan fan, the thing that popped in my mind was, man, I wish we had an Odell Beckham Jr. And I wish we just paid players at this point, because so many do. It's quote unquote unfair. It's going to be turned over. So why not just join the masses in breaking that silly rule?
We've also found out, yes, along with that, we found out recently that also schools, in pretending that the student athletes are students, that some let them do all their classes online. The Joe Burrow story is fascinating, where last month when they clinched the SEC order, he actually goes out to meet some students. I want to actually meet some students, because he has no interaction with students at all.
That's right.
And he's a student.
And how about the fact that they had a booster go to jail, federal jail, right before the season started, because he took $800,000 away from a hospital and misused it. And about $180,000 of that went to the father of a lineman on LSU. I cannot remember which one it was, to pretend that guy worked for the charity. I mean, it was an illegal booster there. Got that player. No one mentions it during the season. They win the national championship.
I still
fans
can't
love
believe
it.
You said what you just said about wanting Michigan to cheat. Now, Michigan football defensive tackle Michael Dumfour has entered the transfer portal to pursue a graduate transfer, with the usual BS quote, "My time here at Michigan has come to an end. These past 4 years have been some of the best times of my life. I've learned and blah, blah, blah." Then why is he leaving? And a lot of people are leaving that program, and I continue to ask rhetorically if they don't want to play for Harbaugh. Now, in our department of another one bites the dust. Cody White has now declared for the NFL draft. Lost in the uproar over the Michigan State football expose in the Detroit News on Monday. This kid out of Novi is Michigan State's best wideout. He's a really
good player.
Really good
number
player,
seven.
And he says the good kid. Yeah, and he's leaving. But all's not lost, gentlemen. All's not lost for Mark D'Antonio.
Yeah,
because today, as we take
Vegas.
This,
yesterday
is the it's Thursday. Thursday, as we tape this, his $4.3 million bonus kicks in on his contract, because they haven't fired him in the wake of all this garbage that's been going out of Michigan State. And that means that for the year 2020, Mark D'Antonio will be paid by Michigan State University to coach its football team $8.7 million total.
I'll be surprised if he coaches.
It's like $1 million a win.
D'Antonio.
It's actually maybe more.
Right?
Are
you
seven
to score. Eight games? And by the way, pal, since you're such a big U of M fan, those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw.
We pay about $1 million a game, too.
That's right.
The going rate.
Well, you know, when D'Antonio got this contract that this bonus kicked in on, it was after the 2015 season, and he was amazing. And let's face it, he has 36-5 in those three seasons. He took his team to the semifinals, though they did get blown out by Alabama. Right. At the time, Mark Hollis said Michigan State's football brand has never been stronger, but unfortunately, the last four seasons have not been nearly as well, and their record is 27-24, 7-19 in the Big Ten. And so, you know, things, and of course, we heard the stories, Bob read it from the Tony Paul's article about how the Austin Robertson thing showed the pressure on D'Antonio without being able to recruit like some of the bigger, more high-profile schools, the lengths they went to try and continue his winning ways, and it didn't work out.
Well, I think they fell down in recruiting. I don't care what they say. You cannot lose all of these players to everybody else. You got to be able to get one or two from time to time, and we just haven't had very much luck recruiting guys. I mean, neither school has really done very well, and since Harbaugh's got there, you're going to have fewer and fewer stars around the country, and as a matter of fact, MSU is supposed to be, and I can't remember his name right now, Dirk Q or something like that, out of Vegas, and he's supposed to be the next sensation coming out of high school. school. And he's supposed to be almost locked down.
You know who he's talking about? This is
No clue whatsoever. Yeah. Okay. No. But you know what?
Why don't you start reading things?
First, well, that was the good pronunciation there.
He makes things up as he goes along, but he can't remember what I did.
Well, let's look up Dirk Q and see if we can find him.
I don't think so.
Is it Dirk
look
Q?
Look up Las Vegas. All right? Las Vegas.
He's going to find out it's in Nevada, and it has a bunch of casinos there.
Recruiting a kid from Vegas.
Meanwhile,
Eli, you mentioned Luke Kuechly at the top of the show.
Oh, my God. What a story. By the way, the one stat I didn't throw in about Joe Burrow, 60 touchdown passes in a season. Is that even – has it ever been done in the NFL?
All-time NCAA record.
Yeah, I think
Dennis Dale McClain did not believe me. I know you did, Eli. When I told him that after that performance against Oklahoma, no one would ever, ever, ever see the likes of it again in college football.
Mm-hmm. Quite likely.
What's he talking about?
So Luke Kuechly, go ahead.
He's just saying
that. You've got to listen to me to find out what I'm talking about. He's busy looking up this Vegas recruit.
He said after the 8 touchdowns and the 7 touchdown passes, and he said he would never see a performance like that again.
I think that's true.
You said they would. Now he's changed his mind. Now it's true. Well, this Luke Kuechly story, it's actually Kuechly is the way it's pronounced. 8 seasons, 28 years old, retires from football. We know why, because he has incurred many concussions, missed 7 games a couple of seasons ago because of concussions, and he doesn't want to be drooling in his cereal in another 20 years. 7-time Pro Bowler, 5-time first team All Pro. He would have made $11 million next year, would have been up for much more than that after that, and he quit the game. He's not the first one to do it. Many others, Patrick Willis, 30 years old, quit the game. So did Andrew Luck before this season. Gronkowski quit. A lot of guys under 30. The difference is we know more about concussions. We know more about the long-term health risks. The research has shown us. They also have financial security.
Right.
And in Kuechly's case, it must have been some type of red light from the medical staff that said, if you continue to play this game, it's going to cost you. And it's very... very sad, but it's the nature of the game. I don't think there'll ever be a shortage of great football players, but more and more guys will make their money and get out early, I think.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Eli. You know what? They used to sing, mothers don't let your babies grow up to be football players now. There's so many parents who will not let their kids play football. And I sure as hell hope that I die before the NFL goes out of business. Soccer becomes the number one sport.
I don't want you to die too early, Bob.
Chris Borland of the 49ers.
Hey, fellas, we kind of buried like a huge story. How about Alex making a Hall of Fame finally? That's a huge story in Detroit.
It is.
For our Detroit-based audience.
It is, for all those years.
Well, it isn't that big because we couldn't find it this morning.
Well, we found it. he was on the list of finalists, and he did make it in. So congratulations to Alex.
You're kidding. Good guy.
Alex is dead. Congratulations to the family of Alex Karras.
Right.
It's a damn shame that he couldn't be alive to see this. Eli, you did not grow up in Detroit. I did. And I saw Alex play essentially his entire career for my once beloved Detroit Lions, only 6'1", 240 at a defensive tackle.
Yeah.
He was so quick. He was so tough, such a competitor. And I thought he should have gotten it a long time ago.
Paul Hornung and Alex
were suspended for 1 year for gambling on NFL games. Hornung, of course, the golden boy with the world champion Packers, was inducted in 1986.
Yeah.
Why did Alex have to wait this long?
I'm going to give you two reasons. First of all, Hornung was on TV every week, and his team won championship after championship under Vince Lombardi.
Yes, that's what I said.
Alex Karras, playing in Detroit on a series of bad teams, had one postseason appearance, an awful game in 1970, losing 5-0 to the Cowboys. So there was no national image for him.
Let me finish.
Another thing may have been that they kind of didn't take him seriously. He's punching horses and blazing saddles. He's an actor on TV.
That's the answer.
And because Detroit just wasn't on the beaten path. So that's the reason why.
Well, he was doing the Johnny Carson show is what he was doing all the time. Being the stand-up comic for somebody's talk
shows.
You
think that would help somebody to remain in the public life?
You would think so, but here's the difference. Paul Hornung was a superstar in some form. One way or the other, he was a legitimate superstar. He had all that promotion coming out of Notre Dame, had all that promotion going up to Green Bay
the
and being
trophy.
A superstar. Mm-hmm. He had no chance of not getting in the Hall of Fame, despite the problems that he had in the NFL. And I thought it was BS anyway when they both got suspended for betting on football.
By the way, did you see was it at the halftime of the championship game on Monday, they had the greatest 11 players in NFL history.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. And I thought it was very interesting. I think 9 of the 11 were offensive players.
No,
you had Earl Campbell, Barry Sanders. You had Roger Staubach.
Herschel
Walker. And so
Jim Brown.
Jim Brown was number one. It was a little disconcerting to see Jim Brown with a cane and everything. I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah. Well, worse yet was Earl. I mean, Earl's knees are shot.
Yeah, he can't even stand it. But
God, he looks so old, I couldn't believe
in
it.
In fairness,
jeez,
though,
he looks awful.
Jim Brown is 82 years old, I think, because he was a rookie in 57. Means he was 22 then, means born in 35. So he's
well, I got news. I worked with him at Pepsi for about 10 years, and he was Jim Brown off the field, too.
Yeah, he's
you know what I mean?
No, but
yes. The only thing he was missing off the field was his helmet and pads.
All right. And I guess those would help out when Jimmy Brown decided to beat up women the way he did. And that's part of the knowledge.
He had one of the great quotes of all time, and that was that women after the age of 26, as he said, 26 start to deteriorate. In other words, their prime is after that, they're kind of, you know, superfluous characters. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it.
Pepsi had a big corporate meeting out in Los Angeles, and Brown and I were there for the dinner. We were the speakers. And that's the night that the woman, unfortunately, fell off the balcony on the 11th floor.
Yeah.
We were there. We were in the other room when it happened.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the cops were everywhere, the FBI. You know, and the president was there. This was unbelievable. I mean, this was incredible.
She's over 26, so Jim didn't really care that much anymore.
Apparently.
I don't recall that, Danny. You better explain. Was Jimmy Brown accused of pushing this woman?
No, but she was staying with him,
I
think. No.
Jimmy Brown was, according to the police report, was on the ledge when she fell.
Yeah.
And that's
will add this, that the ledge itself was only about 3 foot high. So if you sat on the ledge, you know, something bad could happen, especially if somebody pushed you.
I just wanted to add that one thing, Eli, to correct what you said a moment ago. When I was a boy growing up, the Lions were real good. They had the runner-up bowl in the NFL. Remember that?
Yes,
in the
second-place
early 60s?
Team. Yeah.
And the Lions played in it. It would have been a top playoff team, but they played in that, I think, 2 straight years, and if memory serves, the loss. But those Detroit Lions teams with Alex Karras and the fearsome foursome, they were pretty good. They just couldn't beat the Packers and then later the Vikings.
You know, we should really try and get Joe Schmidt on. Joe's in his mid-80s, and I hear he's not doing that well.
Let's try.
He used to joke with me about that runner-up bowl. By the way, Joe Schmidt's one of the funniest guys that ever wore any uniform in Detroit. And what a crock it was to have to go play in that stupid game.
I compare him to Duffy Doherty at a dinner.
Anyway,
they were great.
Hey, are you aware of the greatness of Star Lincoln's quartet of critically acclaimed SUVs?
Of course I am.
Because as we roll into 2020, this company's got a lot of momentum along with Star Lincoln. 20% sales increase in 2019 because of these four amazing SUVs and three new ones, the Corsair, the Nautilus, and the Aviator. The fourth is that incumbent Navigator, the 2018 North American Truck of the Year. Comfort and safety features, too lengthy to list, from the exclusive 14-speaker Revel Audio. The Copilot 360 is like your wingman. It lets you know whenever any type of danger may lurk. I love my Nautilus. One reviewer said, and I agree with this, he said it's, quote, a distinctly plush ride and relaxed driving dynamics. I drive and I say, I don't even deserve a car this nice. Another describes the three-row Aviator as sophisticated. I'm used to driving clunkers, but this is a great car. As sophisticated and luxurious. Here's what it really comes down to. Which one of Star Lincoln's Fab 4 SUVs best fits your taste and lifestyle? Easy to find out. Just go to Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership, Hoop McInerney Star Lincoln. Everyone gets the renowned Star Treatment at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And thinking of the Star Treatment, you can get it at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Luke Nowacki is the ultimate wealth manager. At least he is the one for our network here. And so many people have gone to Luke because we say you can trust him and they realize that you can. The number is 248-663-4748. He'll create a plan to reach all your financial goals. It's a complimentary consultation. Answer all your financial questions, whether retirement is on its way, whether you're young and need to balance your assets and your future earnings, plan for your future obligations. Go to Luke. He will set you on a path that you are comfortable with. 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, product services referenced here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Next,
I got
all right,
one for
we
next.
Have forgotten to mention one major thing here. All that football we were doing. Fellas, we're going to decide who's playing in the Super Bowl this coming Sunday.
Ooh.
3 o'clock. Tennessee at Kansas City. These are the NFL, as you well know, conference championships. And then we have Green Bay at San Francisco. And that's a game that a lot of people think pits the NFL's two best teams against each other. KC game is interesting for many reasons, mostly because Andy Reid has not won a Super Bowl. And so the debate goes on. Is Andy Reid a Hall of Fame coach? And some people say it doesn't matter. Other people say, no, he got to win at least one Super Bowl. It will be cold in Kansas City at game time, maybe 18 to 20 degrees, but it will be clear and no weather problems are expected in the Bay Area either. There's, so, boys, your picks.
There's one thing about Andy. Andy's been a winner most of his career in the NFL. He's just been a successful guy. He knows what he's doing. A lot of teams around the league copy what he does. Mm-hmm. They look at his tapes and they try to do the same game plan he did the week before. One thing about it, it'll be Kansas City and San Francisco. And yet, I saw this morning, I was reading over these touts, you know, and I don't like the touts, but the touts, out of the five, four picked Green Bay to win. Their game
very
this Sunday.
Interesting. I was shocked. San Francisco. That San Francisco defense is so
good.
By the way, did John Lynch? No, he wasn't one of the Hall of Fame finalists, but he was on the list. He didn't make the 15. What he has built there in San Francisco is remarkable. But you know, there's only been two upsets so far.
Yeah,
and the Titans pulled off both upsets.
Both of them.
And so, are people dismissing the fact that they could upset Kansas City? What is the line in that game? I didn't even
seven. Look.
Seven?
Yeah, both.
I look
both
at the weather. It's your
seven.
Job to look at the line.
My question is, how can you bet against the Titans after what they've done?
I will. I okay. guarantee I will. Right. Because
I'm not saying I wouldn't either. But
it's time
but,
to come back to reality.
Maybe
you know
so.
And I'm probably not going to. You know, I think San Francisco and I think Kansas City.
What's the line in the San Francisco?
Seven. Both of them are seven.
Seven.
Right at seven.
You know why I'm not going to bet either game? Because I have no clue who's going to win or cover the spread. And neither do you guys, and neither does Fellhour or anybody listening to us right now.
Well,
I won
both sides of the bet last weekend, and you
then
didn't,
you got
so
lucky.
Zip it.
Then
no, I didn't get lucky. I worked on it last week.
If the Houston-Kansas City game doesn't convince you of what you just said, Bob, then nothing will. Where here you have a game that was a blowout for Houston that turned into a blowout for Kansas City. Who can ever remember a game that went from a blowout to a blowout the other way? That was wild. And so I do think that Mahomes will get them passed.
I do, too. I mean, the guy's got a billion-dollar arm. The kid can throw like nobody I've ever seen in the NFL in a long time.
Well, what I want to do here, guys, is I want to just go for another couple of minutes, and then I want to bring in Milt Wilcox. And then we can do the mailbag after that, okay? Because we have to say goodbye to radio rather shortly.
Okay. So. That's a good idea. So the next big story, we've been so busy today, this could have been the lead story on any other day. Somehow, after winning the Jack Adams Trophy, named after the late Detroit general manager, as the NHL's top coach 2 years ago, Vegas fires former Red Wings star Gerard Gallant. They fired him because they lost four games in a row. Not only that, the NHL All-Star Game is coming up January 25th, and he's supposed to be the head coach of the Western team.
Well, he'll have to buy a ticket.
They brought in Peter DeBoer to take his place. It's like his fifth team. One of the teams he coached, besides the Florida Panthers, where I've met him, was the Plymouth Whalers.
Oh, okay.
So DeBoer lived in Detroit for some time coaching the Plymouth Whalers. So the Panthers – and this is serious. They exist only so we Northerners can see our favorite teams down here. Shocked the NHL when they fired Gerard Gallant to begin with a couple years ago. They fired him at the rink before a game and told him he was on his own getting the hell out of the arena and getting a cab to the airport. This is a true story. I'm not making this stuff up. That's the kind of class they operate with. And the main thing now is he's one of Steve Yzerman's best friends. They were line mates all those years in Detroit. Good God, is this a match made in heaven or what? But again, as we record this program, no announcement yet that Spuddy's coming in.
You know, on the heels of the Wings losing 8-2 to the
Don't
Islanders,
like that?
What a dreadful evening that was. My goodness, poor Jimmy Howard, and he was replaced by Pickard in the first period, gave up 4 goals on 7 shots. Pickard comes in, gives up 5 goals on 19 shots. The other team, meaning the Islanders, only shot the puck 26 times and scored 8 goals. Now, was that the goalie's fault? Is it the defense fault? Is it that they were you know, giving up the puck in their own end? It was all those things, and they tried to defend Howard, his teammates did, by saying that we didn't help him out.
There's no talent.
Well,
that's not quite true. And when you are losing like this in any of our four sports, when you continue to embarrass yourself and the team doesn't perform, the coach or manager gets fired.
Why don't you understand? Why don't you understand sports? I that's what I don't understand. You've called yourself a broadcaster for how many years? 80, 85, 90?
Well, and you don't even
still
know
don't understand.
Puck is
what's the point?
I know
stop
what hockey
up.
Pucks. I got 150 poly pucks on my wall at home. Listen, let me tell you something. You can't win baseball, football, basketball, or hockey games, especially at this level, without a nucleus of some talent. They have none right now. None. Until they go out and find two or three guys that can put a package together and pass the puck appropriately, get the puck across the blue line, get the puck where it belongs, they are not going to win. I don't care if you got 10 Steve Yzermans, unless they're playing on the ice, they can't win. So therefore, you're going to have to sit here and just take a beating like the rest of us.
I tend to agree, Bob. I think Blasher will survive the season.
Me too.
We have to say goodbye at this point to our radio audience. We say goodbye to WCWA.
I guess you better want Denny to name the three players on the Wings top line. I was going to put them on.
We got to say goodbye. Thank you for radio. Thank you for listening on the radio. We're going to continue here on the No Filter Sports Podcast.
I got a cute. Can I do a cute?
Real fast.
Cute, quick one?
Cute, quick.
Antonio Brown with the Police Athletic League in Hollywood, Florida. They are now returning all the money he has donated, they've given him stay off the property, state notice that if he crosses the line to come on the property of Police Athletic League, they will arrest him. Is that a long way to fall? They took his money, they're giving
right.
it back.
What he has done to subvert his career and his life is pretty sad.
It's really amazing.
It's terrible.
It's closer to home, Denny. Yeah. Derrick Rose was fined $25,000 this week by the NBA for throwing a pen toward the crowd at Little Caesars Arena. I've seen the video. He just tosses it out onto the floor. But all is forgiven because you know what? That was one hell of a win for the Pistons Wednesday night at Boston. You know, we talk about how the Pistons are possibly going to get any better with Drummond undoubtedly leaving and only mid-level draft choices. This kid, Sekou Doumbouya, is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
He's really played well lately. Their number one draft choice. He's 6'8", 230. He's only 19 years old.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He could be a big piece of the Detroit
And he hasn't played the game for very long either. But they're
Michigan hopeless. Coming up at Iowa Friday night. Wisconsin comes back and plays at Michigan State the same evening in East Lansing with State, and I'm sure they will rebound against an average Wisconsin team following the disaster at West Lafayette on Sunday. Okay, you want to go to Milt?
Let's do that. He won 17 games to the 84 Tigers and starred in the postseason. He won the pennant clincher, a shutout in Game 3 of the ALCS against the Royals. Went on to win Game 3 of the World Series against the Padres. But when you talk about Milt Wilcox, it was a night, April 15th, 1983, that we remember who were around back then. I was at Channel 4 that night watching it, and a game that we televised on WDIV. We didn't televise them all. When Milt Wilcox had a brush with baseball immortality. Listen to George Kell.
He got him right down the middle, and he's called out on strikes. Milt Wilcox has retired 24 batters in a row. Ground ball to first. Easy play for Leach. Two outs in the ninth inning, and Jerry Hairston will come on to bat. Jerry Hairston, the batter, and the pitch. And a base hit up the middle. He hit the first pitch. A base hit by Hairston. Would you believe it? What a great and a gallant effort by this man who came within one pitch of pitching a perfect ball game.
Now, Milt, welcome Milt Wilcox. Milt, we're watching this story that I did with you years ago when we did the locker room with Gibby and Gary. And before you face Hairston, you say you were trying to throw him a fastball inside. Denny watched it. Here's Denny's question for you.
Milt, you know, listen, you were in total control. We watched an inning or two this morning of the ballgame. Boy, you really did have good stuff that day. In fact, Kaline said he had never seen you have this kind of stuff in a ballgame before. So everybody was all over the board talking about you. And you didn't make a statement in the postgame was, yes, I tried to throw a fastball inside. Milt, I want to tell you, you missed it by 3.5 feet.
Denny, that was my problem my whole career.
Good for you.
Oh.
Well, Milt, I never got into the ninth inning with a no nothing. So my hat's off to you for going that long.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what, Danny? You had your brushes of greatness too, just like everybody. But you know, it's just one of those things. You know,
sure.
I mean, if it hits the ball 2 feet to the to the right, it's right at Lou Whitaker. So you never know.
That's exactly right. And I got to play with Al Kaline and Willie Horton.
How often do people bring that up to you? Do people remember that it was an early season game? You didn't get the perfect game. Do people around the country remember that, or is that kind of more of a Detroit thing?
No, I get that all over the country, you know, because we got Detroit Tiger fans all over the country, and I travel a lot now. You know, I'm out on the West Coast and California and Nevada, Texas, and I run into Tiger fans, and basically that's the first thing they bring up.
You know, in 84, you won 17 ball games. Dan won 18 and Jack won 19. When I looked over another story I did with you on your great effort against Kansas City in the playoffs, you mentioned this stat that I wasn't aware of, because Denny always talks about his complete games. In 84, you set a record 33 starts and zero complete games. Explain that.
In 1 year?
Yep.
I would be making a lot of money nowadays, wouldn't I?
Right. Darn right you would.
You don't have to pitch complete games anymore. Back in the day, Danny, you remember, we had to pitch complete games or we probably didn't win a game.
Milt, can you imagine going out and having to only throw 100 pitches?
Yeah, that's just about when we used to start getting warmed up.
That's exactly right. Listen, well, let me ask you.
You know the thing about it is, I always tell people it's a lot easier to pitch nowadays, especially if you're
sure.
a starting pitcher.
Absolutely.
And it should your career should be a lot longer, because you only have to gut it out for five innings, sometimes four innings, and then you know you got the bullpen coming in. But 84 was such an easy year for me, because I was never expected to go past the fifth or sixth inning, because we had such a good bullpen, and usually we had a pretty good lead, because you know
sure.
Trammell and Whitaker and Parrish and Gibby and all those guys were knocking in runs, and we usually had a lead.
Well, I like to compare it to, not only could we only throw 100 pitches, 105 pitches, but we were only, as fast as you and I worked as pitchers, we would only be out there less than an hour if we only had to throw 100 pitches.
Yeah, sometimes I was out there a lot less than that, though.
Now, wait a second. There's an important fact here. Denny got through 68 and 69 by getting cortisone shots all the time, and you didn't complain about it back then because you were a warrior. You were getting cortisone shots like crazy, too. Tell us, that's the reason you didn't pitch complete games or stopped after five innings, because your arm was about to die, and you gave it to the team, essentially, in 84.
Basically, you're right. I started getting cortisone shots in my arm in 1980, and we found out that there was an issue with my AC joint. That's the main joint on top of your shoulder.
Right.
It wasn't the rotator cuff, basically. It was the AC joint. So Dr. Taiji, who was our team physician at the time, started injecting me in the joint. And basically, it would last, and as Denny knows, it lasts about 6 weeks the first time, and then about 4 weeks the second time.
Yep.
And then it gets less and less and less. And we found out that the less innings I pitched, of course, the less inflammation in the shoulder. But you know, in 84 I had seven cortisone shots that year, and I didn't miss a start, and it was because of the seven cortisone shots.
Of course. I had 24 in 69.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. Oh. I believe it. You know, the Tigers actually flew me. We were in Kansas City and my shoulder was starting to act up for the playoffs that year, and they flew me into Chicago. Dr. Taiji was holding a conference in Chicago, and nobody knew about this. The media, nobody on the team. They flew me into Chicago. They had a taxi waiting for me. He took me to this hotel where Taiji was at, and he had a cortisone and painkiller shot in his room. I got an injection in the room, went back down, caught the thing to the airport, flew me back to Kansas City, and I came back with the team, and that's when I pitched that 1-0 game against Kansas City, but I couldn't even feel my shoulder, so it was out. It was like I was out there with a brand new shoulder.
I got to tell you, too, did you ever run into an orthopedic guy in Oakland who would take you into his back office or into his home if he was not at his office and have you take your clothes off before he gave you the injection?
Which one is this?
Well, there's some weird people out in California, but no, I never ran into that guy.
I ran into this guy one time, and when he told me, I took my shirt off because that's where the injection was going to go on the shoulder. He said, "Oh no, I want you to get totally naked because I do a couple of other things." And I looked at him and I said, "Doc, what couple of other things are you going to do?" And he said, no, "I'm not trying to do anything funny." I said, "You best not be doing anything funny." And I said, "Doc, hang on a minute. Let me make a phone call." So I got on his office phone and I called nobody. And I said, I got to be there. Oh, God. Okay, bye. Hung up the phone. I said, "Doc, I got to go. I'll be back tomorrow." I never saw that. We should write a book on nothing but cortisone injections.
That and weird things that happen in baseball that nobody ever hears about.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead, Bob. You got a question? Go ahead.
Yeah, I sure do. Milt, we obviously want your opinions on this amazing brouhaha going on in baseball right now with the pitch and sign stealing. But I'm not going to ask you if the world champion 84 Tigers stole signs. I just want to know who the best sign stealers were on the roster and on the coaching staff.
Well, by far the best sign stealer I've ever been around was Roger Craig. I mean, Roger Craig used to stand right by Sparky, and he would have he wouldn't steal the catcher signs. He would steal the coach's signs when they were given to the third base coach or second base coach or whatever. They were coming from the dugout, and he could watch a guy one or two innings, and he would have the indicator. He'd have what the signs were. I mean, that's just part of baseball. That was always part of baseball.
Sure.
He was the best. Now, as a player, really, most hitters, and Danny will tell you this, most hitters didn't want to know what was coming.
That's right.
Because it was easy to screw up the hitters. If they're looking for a fastball or curveball, let's say, and you throw a fastball right down the middle and they're looking for, let's say they had a called curveball, it's all over for the rest of the game. Those guys' hands are all screwed up.
That's right. In fact, I talked to Tom Petrarch and Kaline this morning, and both of them said the same thing. Don't ever tell me that the pitch is coming, whatever it might be.
So, yeah, the majority of them don't want to know it, and that's the reason, because they're not 100% sure. And you know, as being just like a pitcher, if you're not 100% sure of throwing your pitch, which I wasn't that day with Jerry Harrison, you don't throw it with full commitment. And the same thing with hitting, you don't hit with full commitment.
Let me ask you one question about Milt Wilcox. Ready? Did you ever cheat? I know I did.
I tried to.
I did too.
I tried to.
I did too.
And you know what they all do? Hitters try to cheat. Ball player, pitchers try to cheat. Hey, I played with Gaylord Perry for 3 years. I learned a lot of secrets.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I
you know Gaylord. Gaylord. Sure. Gaylord would throw. He would throw a grease ball, spitter. He would throw a sandpaper, not a sandpaper ball, but a scuff ball. He would put pine tar on the ball. He would put talcum powder on the ball. There was all sorts of things that he would do. And I don't know if they worked, but they sure seemed like that they did.
Well, we'll tell you one quick story, 10 seconds or less. I got to learn how to throw a spitter with Preparation H from John Wyatt. Preparation
H. I don't want to hear that story.
No.
Does it relate to the doctor in L.A.? I hope
no,
not.
No, the doctor in L.A. was still in L.A. But this was really something, because Runge was the home plate umpire, and Runge said, "If we light a match around you, are we all going up in flames?" So
those pitches are not easy to control.
No, they aren't.
I tried to throw a KY jelly ball one time, put a little bit on your finger, yeah. And it came out about 90 miles an hour, or maybe 85, and squirted out, hit the back of the backstop, and I go, "That's it. I can't throw that one no more."
Hey, let's get back to the subject that Bob brought up. So Alex Cora has been fired. A.J. Hinch has been fired. These are two guys, the most respected managers in the game. Lou Now, who is the Astros GM, is credited with the second wave of technology and analytics. Is it an overreaction? Are these guys tainted for life? And is it all for public image?
Yes, and yes. I think there's an overreaction to it. I think there has to be something done to it, but I don't think these guys ought to lose their careers over it, because this has been going on for years and years and years. It's just that they got caught doing it. And the only reason they got caught doing it was because they had a disgruntled pitcher, I guess.
Yeah.
Who
fires.
Did an interview. Yeah, and they found out about it. I mean, I guarantee you that other teams have tried to do it, and they do it, and they just hadn't got caught. But,
sure.
Hey, let's do this. set up the rules, because that's never been stealing signs has never been anything where you lose your whole career.
Right, right, absolutely.
You know, people have been doing it. Give them a strict warning. They're not supposed to do it. Find them the way. These guys should lose their jobs over it. I mean, for God's sake, look what baseball has done to these guys in baseball that have taken steroids and all this other stuff. Those guys did not lose their careers. Right. They lost the chance to go to the Hall of Fame for the time being. But I think they overreacted way too much.
Yeah, and I think the penalties, as far as this goes, are way too severe, number one. But if you're going to have penalties as a guideline, maybe you use the drug penalties as the guideline for this spitball thing or this illegal
like a suspension, yeah, a short suspension?
Maybe not a suspension, but at least a big fine, $25,000, $50,000, $100,000.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, there's ways they can monitor that. You know,
sure.
It's funny when you go to a Major League Baseball game now, you see television monitors in the dugout, basically.
Yep.
Or in the hallway right there. A lot of the teams do all their taping right outside the dugout. So the players have easy access. They can come back in and watch the pitcher, how you pitched against them the time before. So all of that stuff's available. Maybe move that stuff out of there. Maybe move it out to the clubhouse or something else. But I think it's way too restrictive for the players, a guy like Cora and those guys. You know, Denny, as you know, we do anything, we do whatever is necessary. Take quarter zone shots, try to steal the other guy's signs to win baseball games.
I agree with you. In fact, Cleet Boyer gave me speed one night to pitch. That's how bad my arm was. He said, "You think you could take speed?" I said, "What's speed?" He says, "It's a little pill, and it'll set you high, and you won't have any pain." Guess what happened? It warmed up, and then we got rained out.
that next 4 hours was a long 4 hours.
Milt, try 2 days.
Go ahead, you know what happens is, as you know, having a sore arm your whole career, but not your whole career, but a big portion of your career, we would try anything at all.
Darn right.
DMSO. I tried DMSO when I was pitching. Yeah. And I tried all sorts of therapies that they use on racehorses. electromagnetic
right.
field therapy. There was all sorts of stuff I tried on my shoulder. I don't know if it was good for me or not, but I wanted to pitch without pain. And sure. When you do that for 5 or 6 years, you're trying anything you can to pitch without pain.
Darn right.
Mm-hmm. So, Milt, Eli mentioned something very interesting to me over the phone this morning before we started the show. You're the only guy who played for Sparky both in Cincinnati and Detroit. So compare and contrast if there were two different Sparky Andersons. It's just your thoughts about Sparky.
I think Jack Billingham was also.
Yeah,
oh, Billingham also. That's right. Yeah.
Two of them, right.
But you know what happened was when I originally was with Cincinnati, that was actually I came up as a non-roster player or a roster player in September. And they had already basically won the pennant in there. They had Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, Tommy Helms. I mean, they had a great team. Wayne Granger, Tony Cloninger. They had some really good players. I was lucky enough to come up and get in there. But Sparky didn't. You know, even late in his career, he didn't like young players very much. He never had a lot of good luck with young players. So he liked the superstars. He liked the older veteran guys. And I kind of got on the wrong side. And the quick story is how I got on the wrong side is, and Denny will remember this kind of stuff. I'm 20 years old. We go to Houston, and there's a bar out in Houston called Gilly.
Oh, yeah.
And Rose and Bench and all these guys were going to Gilly's bar to ride the Bronco or, have a couple drinks or whatever. And they said, "Hey, come on, Rook, you go along with us." And the older players always took care of the younger players.
By the way, they only weren't riding the Bronco.
Yeah, exactly. They were looking for other things. But so I went out there, and then, of course, we stayed out late. And so I get in. My roommate was Mike Kruko. And I asked Mike Kruko, I said, "Mike, so what's going on? Did Sparky have room check?" He goes, "I don't know. I wasn't in." And, of course, the next day, the first thing, I walk in the clubhouse, and Alex Grammas goes, Larry Shepard goes, "Hey, Milt, Sparky wants to see." And I walk in, and he goes, "What time did you get in last night?" And I wasn't going to lie to him, and I said, "After curfew." He says, "Who were you with?" And I wouldn't tell him. And he goes, "I want to know who you were with." I said, I'm thinking to myself, am I going to snitch on Johnny Bench and Pete Rose and Lee May and Tony Perez? I'm not going to snitch on those guys. So I kind of sucked it up and said I was out by myself. I had some friends, da-da-da-da. And from that day on, Sparky never liked me. And about a year later, they traded me to Cleveland. And then the first thing, of course, when Sparky came over to the Tigers in 79, if you guys remember, the first thing he did was take me out of the starting rotation and put Steve Baker in the rotation.
Oh, darn. Jeez. Wow.
And I thought my career was over, but I was lucky enough. I got one more chance. I pitched a shutout against the White Sox, actually. And Aurelio Rodriguez made a great play at third base to save my shutout and probably extend my career with the Tigers.
How did you hurt your arm? You told me a story once. You were outside in the cold. You couldn't get back in the house. Something happened to your
do
arm.
Do I have to tell that story?
Well, I didn't give the details because I think you were married at the time. But I didn't give the. By the way, Bob said on the way in to change the subject that Wanda Wilcox, your first wife, was without a doubt the hottest sports reporter that ever walked into this town.
I didn't say sports reporter. I don't think she wasn't.
Well, she did. She was for a brief period of time.
Yeah, but that's not what I said.
But anyway, that's
no. Yeah, well,
God only knows what you said.
Yeah, exactly. To be honest with you, I did hurt my shoulder. I was 22 years old. I was pitching with the Cleveland Indians. I came up. I was traded from Cincinnati to Cleveland for a guy by the name of Ted Ulander, and he was a hitter. Danny, remember that guy?
Yeah, sure.
And then Brock Davis. It was a high minor league draft pick.
Yeah.
And they traded me over, and I started out the season, I think, over there 5-1. I was leading the American League in shutouts and strikeouts and everything else. Had Gaylord Perry on the team, Dick Tidrow. I mean, we were rolling. And then one night I went out with some friends. I got caught outside a security gate trying to get back into this apartment complex in Kansas City in the freezing cold. I ended up getting strep throat, and the strep throat put me in the hospital. It was so bad, so I missed 3 weeks of pitching, and instead of them working me back in the rotation when I got ready, Ken Aspromonte was my manager. He put me right back into the rotation, and I had to pitch. I got beat by Dave McNally and the Baltimore Orioles, I think 3-1 or 2-1, and I got beat again by Wilbur Wood at the White Sox. He beat me, but I pitched complete game, and then all of a sudden I went out the next day to try to brush my teeth, and I couldn't lift my shoulder.
So then you have to go down to the minor leagues. Cleveland gives up on you. You're pitching in the minor leagues, and somehow the Tigers come after you when you're at Wichita. That was you must have thought that you were in the home stretch. Maybe your career was over. And then, of course, you went on to have 7 really good seasons with the Tigers, winning 80-some games. What was that like to make that transition when they kind of resurrected you or gave you another chance?
Okay, so another real quick story that's funny. So I get traded from the Wichita Arrows, which is the Cubs minor league team, to the Evansville Triplets. All right, so I go over there, and Fred Hatfield's my manager. And Bill LaJoy saw me pitch a game in Colorado against the Denver team, which was the AAA for Denver. I mean, I can't remember who the AAA team was.
Bears, Denver Texas. Bears.
Yeah, Denver Bears.
Yeah, Denver. So he saw me pitch. He saw me pitch one inning over there, and I had like 2 strikeouts. My shoulder was starting to come back. So they trade me. Bill LaJoy gets me on a trade. And so I pitched really good my first appearance, and Fred Hatfield walked over to me and goes, "Well, you can't pitch anymore for 3 weeks." And I said, "Why is that, Fred?" He said, "Because we made a trade, and it's all contingent on how you pitch. We don't want you to pitch very well because we traded you for a set of old baseball uniforms and some baseball equipment."
No, come on.
Swear to God. They said, old uniforms and baseball equipment we traded you for. So if you pitch any better, we have to put players involved. And so I went. I 3 weeks I didn't pitch. I went. I sat on the bench for 3 weeks. Jeez. Fred Hatfield was there. Tom Brookins was on the team. It was back in. I think Phil Mankowski was there. There was a bunch of other young players there.
Wow.
And so then, as the 3 weeks were up, Hatfield comes over and says, "Okay, you can start pitching." And then I went on and started pitching really well, and that's how I got up with the Tigers.
Isn't that something?
Now, here's something I found my old 1978 press guide, because I know his first year with the Tigers was 77. And it says in here, first of all, it says, Milt calls his fastball a yakadoo. Don't know what that is.
Right.
And also
it's a fastball.
And also a slip pitch. What's a slip pitch?
It's a slip pitch.
What's a slip pitch?
Slip pitch is like a big
change.
Well, they got it a little wrong. My Yakadoo was actually a curveball.
Yeah, okay. Right.
We call a Yakker. We could call a Yakker, right? A Yakker's a curveball.
Right.
And a slip pitch was a changeup.
Yeah.
It's basically a changeup. It just slips out of your hand. So basically that's what it was. You got to remember, those guys writing those articles back in the day didn't know what they were doing. But
here's the part that's so funny. Because Denny, and we laugh at him all the time, always talks about how bowling helped rehabilitate his arm. And we're laughing because with all the modern sports technology, with all the science, to think bowling is a way to recondition your arm. And here it says, Milt says off-season bowling strengthened his arm when he was fighting tendonitis following his nosedive at Cleveland.
Well, you have to remember that pitching back in the day when we were there, Denny, there was no
machines.
There was no machines or anything else. So rotator cuff injuries, nobody knew anything about rotator cuff injuries.
Absolutely.
So I went to a doctor in Oklahoma City, where I'm from, and it was at the Bone and Joint Clinic, and there was a doctor there by the name of Dr. O'Donohue. O'Donohue, if you go back and search who the guys like Job and Curlin and Andrews and all these, who they actually did all of their training under and looked after, was Dr. O'Donohue at the Oklahoma Clinic.
Really?
He did not want to operate on pitchers because he said that's the worst thing you could do. And his idea was take up bowling, because when you pitch, you only use certain muscles as a pitcher.
Sure.
And you never use the back muscles. As you're pulling a bowling ball back, you're using different muscles opposite than pitching. And those would stretch, and those would actually help your pitching muscles.
Sure, sure.
And that's the reason I got on that, and my career turned right around.
I'll tell you, people don't understand it, and he laughs all the time when I mention it. But, you know, not only did I become a good – I carried a 212 back then, so I could bowl too. But that – and to be honest with you, totally honest, I did not know – what I was doing to my shoulder, that I was actually improving it. All I knew was my legs kept getting stronger and stronger, never thinking about my shoulder. And then once I got down to spring training and started throwing the ball again, I said, where the hell did all the pain go? And bang, it was gone.
It's amazing. You know, it's stuff that they're doing now. But, you know, O'Donohue knew this back in the 70s.
Sure.
And then if you go back to Job and Curlin, they studied what he did, and then Andrews also studied what – I mean, if you talk to these guys, there's a guy here in Detroit, in Jacksonville, at the arthroscopic. He does all the work for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he is a proponent of – he knew who Dr. O'Donohue was. I was talking to him, and he knew about Andrews and all this. He knew about who Dr. O'Donohue is, and if you're not in that business, you know, you really wouldn't know that kind of guy.
Sure, of course.
So,
hey, Phil, one more thing for me before we have to let you go. What do you just tell people, because they all want to know, where do you live now and what are you doing?
I moved to Jacksonville, Florida about 10 years ago to get out of the cold in Michigan. Right now outside it's about 78 degrees, blue sky.
Stop it.
Beautiful, beautiful out. I've been here for about 10 years and I love it. And what I do now is I go around the country, put on dog shows. We do shows all over the time. We just had a show about 2 weeks ago in Vero Beach. You know where that's at. That's down by where you live. And then next week or week after, we got a show down in West Palm Beach. We put on dock jumping. That's where dogs run down a dock. They jump through, they run through the air and dive into a big swimming pool. I've got 5 rigs now. I send those rigs all over the country, and
we do
about 130 shows a year, and it works out good for everybody.
So you need a couple trucks. I got a couple trucks for sale.
So they're your dogs, or do local people use their own dogs, or do you bring the dogs to the equipment and the dogs?
I bring the equipment, and people bring their dogs out.
Okay.
So what they do is I get paid by the county fairs, state fairs, the different hunting and fishing shows to put on the show for their entertainment. And then people pay me to bring their dogs in and jump.
And that's something.
So you kind of get paid. You kind of get paid twice. But you know, I mean, there's a lot of expenses that we. I mean, when you go across country from here to from Florida to California and back is about $2,500 in fuel prices and hotel rooms and everything else. We got a lot of expenses, but hey, it does a lot of good. We have a lot of fun, and I meet a lot of cool people all over the country.
Lastly, 84 Tigers, got to talk him out. It's been 35 years. What are your fondest memories? What do people bring up the most? What do you take from it the most? And after that, we're going to ask you about what's going on with Lou Whitaker. But first of all, the 84 Tigers, and how does it sit with you after all these years?
And Denny will tell you, it's basically not the championship. It's the guys that you play with, and those are the guys that you remember. And the championship actually brings you a lot closer to all those guys. And as you get older, the memories of it are getting dimmer and dimmer. But you still remember the relationships that you have with the guys and stuff like that. So I'm thinking it's the people that you played with. And one of the things were, and to be honest with you, was Sparky Anderson. I always tell people Sparky wasn't the greatest manager in the world, but he was probably the nicest guy. And he wanted you to respect the game and respect God and your family and just be a nice guy. And that's what I try to go by.
I think to add to that, when he refused to manage replacement players, it never really happened in 1995. I told him that's the proudest I've ever been of having known you, because you were going to maintain the integrity of the game, and you were going to sacrifice your career before you would do something that would have tainted the game.
He's a man. He was a man of morals, to be honest with you. And, you know, he loved the game of baseball, and you know, he was like Casey Stengel. He wasn't always correct in all the words he spoke, but he loved baseball, and he loved God, and he loved his family.
Yeah. I think Lasorda did the same thing. Yeah. He refused to manage.
Lastly, I mentioned it. My theory about Lou is that he was a little bit distant. He wasn't comfortable with the media. He didn't like the microphone. Not his fault. Some of us are a little more socially awkward than others. And that's why, even though he was the same player as Trammell, he's not in because the media might have thought he was standoffish or something like that. Is that – what else can it be besides that?
I think that's what it is. You look at his stats and what I would rather have Lou Whitaker out there than almost any other. Ryan Sedberg, a second baseman. I think I'd rather have Lou out there. Lou was always in the right place at the right time. And another thing is, you know him dive for a ball or dive at first base because he was always in the right place, like Trammell, always in the right place at the right time. Yep, yep. What I wish the guys would have done when Trammell, and I know it's all hindsight, is when Trammell's guys were coaching the manager types, I wish they'd have brought Lou back. That might chance a little bit more.
Yeah. But you know what? It's one thing consistent with what you just said. No matter what era it was, the good players were always in the right place.
Yep. Yep.
It was amazing. Trammell was amazing. That game I pitched, that perfect game, near perfect game, a guy first inning hits a ball between my legs, like a one hopper between my legs, and I'm back to the base. And I turn around and Trammell's in front of the ball, catching the ball, and he was supposed to be in the hole a little bit. And I don't know how he got there, but he was always in the right place at the right time.
Were you wearing a cup?
I never wore a cup, Danny.
I didn't either. It scared the hell out of me when they went between my legs.
Hey, Milt.
Yeah, it did. I got hit a couple of times. It really scared me, but I just never could wear one.
Yeah, we don't want to test our manhood at 100 miles an hour.
Milt, great talk.
No. It's about 140.
Great talking to you.
Been great, Milt.
Let's keep
Thank
in touch.
You very
Thanks for joining us, man.
A long time, Milt. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Guys, too, take it easy. And I say this, but I always said, go Tigers.
Yeah, okay, go Tigers. We'll see. We'll see if they can lose less than 114.
Well, the other thing is go Dogs.
Yeah, go Dogs.
Good guy. He's still Milt.
The funny thing about it is all of those names that came out of Milt, and we're talking about the three of us know who every single one of those guys were, whether it was Ted Uhland or somebody else. So many younger people listening to us have no idea who he's talking about. Time flies, man.
Hey, I remember Steve baseball. Baker, who Sparky put in there instead of him and replaced him in the rotation.
Yeah. I remember. I remember telling Teddy Uhlander was in a horrible slump, and we're winning one night in the eighth or ninth inning, and I told Freehan, I said, tell him we're going to tell him what's coming. He said, what? I said, just tell him we're going to let him hit the ball. And you know what he did? He took three straight pitches.
Oh,
that's a slump, funny. Big boy.
Right, want to do a little mailbag before we say goodbye?
Yeah, let's do the mailbag, boys, here. We're not going to make it too long today because Eli does not like that, and we're running out of time. But, folks, I want to first apologize. We had some kind of snafu with Gmail. I just learned about that yesterday, and I noticed for some strange reason that our mailbag was surprisingly light for a couple of weeks. Now, problem has been resolved. We have all of your back emails you sent, and as Eli squeals and squirms and protests, Denny and I will try to get to all of these on upcoming shows. For now, this is from Mark. I absolutely love the banter among the three of you. Find myself laughing aloud. Brandon is a producing genius and a good representation of what our generation really looks like. I'm 30, had never heard of Bob, but love his insight on the FLs and really appreciate his sports knowledge, particularly about Michigan. Joy, you guys stretching the shows out. Love the Mike Lucci interview. And he also says, and this is what we hear from some of the younger people. Oh, man, this old people. This happened a long time ago. So this young man is 30, and he says, the old stories have me constantly rewinding and re-listening. I love when Bob and Eli tell their radio and classic television stories about the business and people you've crossed paths with. Denny is so interesting to listen to, even if the stories get repeated a few times. And I would add that the details sometimes change too, Denny, from one telling to the next.
Come on, jeez.
So, so he's got two questions. And this is a good, Eli, can you get any of the 2005 Pistons on the show for an interview?
I suppose. I mean, who you want to talk to? Rip Hamilton?
Oh, any one of those guys. They only won a world championship, yeah, right? So any one of those guys. If you get Chauncey Billups, I'm up here getting anybody. And then he just asked what the highest level of baseball I ever umpired. Well, I umpired college baseball. Here's Matt Schweiner. He says, I love the show. Been with you from the start. But you got to quit saying that Matt LaFleur went to Central Michigan. Honest error. He was born in Mount Pleasant, but he went first to Western, then transferred to Saginaw Valley State. My daughter is a senior at SVSU, and she tells me, can you imagine this, guys? At the campus at Saginaw Valley, it's going over the moon with the success of Matt LaFleur. Huh. And, you know, I think another thing that confused me, Matt, was that he also – was an assistant coach at Central Michigan for some time.
Well, Central had Dan LaFleur, too. I think different spelling of the last name, but similar pronunciation. I confuse it all the time.
And they had a quarterback named LaFleur, too,
that's,
right?
That's what you said.
Oh, see, the quarterback, was that his name?
Let me interrupt you for just a second, Bob. Odell Beckham has just had an arrest warrant issued for battery again. So
really?
Yeah, again.
He can't buy his way out of that one with $100 bills.
No, he wants to hide some money, he could send it this way, couldn't he?
He slapped a cop on his butt.
Did he really?
Let's wait the judge. But back to the mailbag here. We'll wind this up for you guys. Ken Taylor sends this. I'm a Grosse Pointe Park native. I am too, Ken. And Michigan grad who has lived in New Jersey for the last 20 years. Great podcast. It's become the staple of my daily commute to Monmouth University where he works. I love the mix of the old and new. It was great you guys lauded Rob Pelinka for his work with the Lakers on the last podcast. But, Bob, you made it sound like he only played in garbage time. That wasn't the case. He played in almost every game he dressed for and was on the floor when Chris Webber called timeout in that 93 championship game. Oh. He wasn't a token walk on type at all. He could play.
He's a good player.
Well, and it's a good point, but I will say this. I looked all this stuff up. Pelinka did play in a lot of games at Michigan, but in 4 years, he only started two. He only averaged 7 minutes a game and 2.6 points per game. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I guess Pelinka could play, just not that well.
Yeah, or that long, right?
Jeremiah, and Kenny adds that he loves the mailbag, and so does Jeremiah, loves the mailbag segment, all the banter, all the listening
questions. Quit trying to sell the mailbag, okay? We got it.
I'm reading what people write, damn it.
Okay.
So this nice person, Jeremiah, who was not a bullfrog, by the way, and if you don't understand what I mean by that.
We understand what you mean. Go ahead. He's got so many asides.
Jeremiah
he likes the questions we read from you listeners because it's not the typical stuff you hear in radio talk. We should trade Stafford for a bag of this. Okay. Also, a question for Bob, and this is because Eli and Denny pick on me all the time, as you know. Bob, I am 33, and I have a checking account. Why do I still work, and is it okay to retire yet? Well, Jeremiah, here's a $64,000 question, pal. How much you got in that checking account?
Okay.
Hey, guys, love the show. Never miss a podcast. I completely agree with Jay Billis's comment on changing the official's motion for an offensive charging call. I know you guys have seen Teddy Valentine. He doesn't get the nickname TV Teddy for nothing. Clearly gets off on getting the crowd pumped up and make sure his call is memorable. So John Zamblian from Royal Oak goes on to say he didn't think officials should be identified at all. Ted Valentine's been one of the top officials in basketball for a long time. So I don't really agree with that. I think they should identify him. But, yeah, they should change that call.
I just figured out what's wrong with the mailbag.
What's wrong?
He reads the mailbag, and then he answers it all the time. You and I don't participate. We can go home.
Maybe that's what it is. I feel like I'm like on an island over here.
If you took the word I out of his vocabulary, it'd be silence over there.
I think maybe we should take alternate letters or something like that.
Maybe.
How did
I made that suggestion some time ago. We can alternate reading letters, and then, yes, you too, Denny,
you know what?
Can comment
right.
on the notes you read from listeners. You also are available to comment on the notes I read from listeners, too. Whenever
See,
you got
it's
something
my fault.
To say.
I had disdain for the mailbag, so I kind of dumped it on him. Now we're saying, I guess if we want to continue, we should take it back. Anything else?
Well, anyway, we're out of time, I think, on the show, folks. Okay. So I want to mention that if you want to get in touch with us on the mailbag, you can email us, asknofilter@gmail.com. You can tweet us, at Eli Zarrett.
Don't do that, because I never see that stuff. I don't think anybody's tweeting me. I wouldn't even put that in
there. At Bob Page Sports, a lot of the stuff I read are tweets that I get. Yes.
Bob gets a lot of it.
Eli, what's the phone number again?
760-89-BALL. 760-89-BALL.
That's what it was. So anyway, feel free to call us anytime. Tell everybody you know about the show, please. And folks, while you're at it, tell everybody you know you got some rock and roll soul.
Thanks for listening.
One of
Bob's many, many musical references. We'll see y'all Monday, January 20th, for the next recording or taping or creating an audio file. No Filter Sports.
Everybody have a good one.
Earl Puritan's coming on. They're going to retire his number at the University of Detroit next Thursday. So Earl's going to be with us on Monday.
All right. See y'all.